The hour of 8:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order State and Local Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections. The first bill on the agenda, members, is House File 2958, and because of the situation with session, I will move that House File 2958 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Rules Committee, and the Marquardt bill will also be going to Rules, and then Rules will be dealing with them after that. Members, this bill is the open meeting law bill. We heard this in committee in our last regular hearing, and it went to the floor. Representative Paymar is here today, and there was an amendment he wished to offer. But before we get to the Paymar amendment, I want just a very brief overview of the bill to remind the members and the public why the bill is before us, and then we will get to the substance of the meeting. So welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Lori Bakrapensky of the Information Policy Analysis Division of the Department of Administration, and we assist the Commissioner of Admin with her duties related to both the Open Meeting Law and the Data Practices Act. We hear from thousands of people each year who have questions about the Open Meeting Law, and many of the citizens who call ask the same questions. And you'd think that with such a short law that it would be really pretty easy to answer those questions. But since so much of the open meeting law has been changed in the subject of case law and commissioner and attorney general's advisory opinions, the answers aren't that easy, and there's a lot of public confusion about this law. The law was created, of course, with some really good goals: promote transparency and open government, to allow the public to monitor meetings when public business is being conducted, but at the same time balancing the need for efficient government. The courts have significantly changed the scope of this law over the years, and since the statute hasn't kept up, the public can't really easily pick up a statute and read and understand what it means to them in the way of access. The goal of my office is to promote understanding and compliance with both the open meeting law and other openness and government privacy laws. Besides giving impartial advice to all sides, we work to proactively improve the clarity of these laws. We want them to be really clear, achieve the goals they're set out to be, and just as importantly, be workable and practical. Setting up and deciding what the policy should be and whether or not it should go further or step back is what your job is all about. We hear ideas from lots of callers about how they would like to have the open meeting law fixed. And as you'd imagine, given that they come from different perspectives, they usually cancel each other out. The commissioner wanted to come up with an open meeting law consensus proposal. So we looked at some old commissioner opinions, case law, and frequent customer questions and came up with some ideas. The first people we met with when we had our bunch of ideas of what we thought would be consensus items, the first people we met with were Mr. Neumeister and the Newspaper Association. It was clear that Mr. Neumeister's interest, which I really appreciate, all of his work and his interest, was in how to overturn the case law and further expand the reach of the open meeting law to more and more advisory groups. We also met with each local government association and drafted a proposal around topics where there seemed to be the most common ground, both from Mr. Neumeister and the newspapers, as well as the government associations and their perspective. The proposal was submitted and approved through the governor's office process. And I know this is a really heavy process committee, and to allow as much time as possible, both the House and Senate files were introduced in the first week to 10 days of session, and it was more than 5 weeks before the bill came to this committee for the first time. Since leaving this committee, there's been a great deal of inaccurate information about the impact of this bill, including just one of the definitions that's in it. The language defines a meeting to incorporate the quorum rule, and that's the part that everyone generally agrees on, and that's not the controversial definition. But the bill also defines what is a public body, and the bill that you have and passed out of committee says any multi-member state, regional, or local governing body. So it's a much shorter, succinct definition. But at lines 213 and 214, as it relates to committees and task forces, that's where the concerns have been raised. The first engrossment of the bill, or existing law, says any committee, subcommittee, board, commission of a public body is subject to the open meeting law. And when you compare that to the new language, says a committee, a subcommittee, a commission, a board, or other similar multi-member body is also subject to the law. The language does not do anything to address the cases or the opinions which have really covered the range as to advisory committees and task forces. It leaves the status quo in place. And as you can see, the language is nearly identical. And actually, the version that you passed out has that other language around other similar bodies that would really get at those task forces as well. The other positive aspects of the bill that I don't want to get lost in the shuffle are requiring that a legal basis be provided when a meeting's going to be closed, ensuring that the public has a right to record and photograph meetings, which is based on an AG's opinion from the 1970s, but still comes up today, and we still have problems with this, where members of the public or reporters are being refused to be allowed to photograph or given special rules or just being barred from being able to do it. We also clarify special meeting notice timelines to reference calendar days, require then state agencies to provide web postings of certain meetings. The concerns about the bill that you may have heard or that you'll hear today really are a desire to have the bill go further than it does and to address the issues of how public bodies form groups to give them advice when they can't make decisions and whether or not the open meeting law should apply to all or some or none of them. The department's committed to continuing to make further clarifications to the law over the next sessions and come up with really workable changes that promote transparency. This bill certainly, it's still a small bill, and it's not a bad bill. It's a good bill that doesn't fix every issue there is to fix, but I don't know that there are many bills that fix every problem the law has. But it does begin that incremental process of building consensus to make the statute easy for the public to read, and this is one that you really want the public to be able to read and understand. Mr. Chair, that's all from me.
Questions from the committee? She will stay close by because we may need her in the future. Representative Paymar, the reason why we're here is the Paymar Amendment. And Representative Paymar, I'm going to move the A11 Amendment. That's the amendment that you wish to have offered?
That is, Mr. Chair.
All right. And I'm not going to take action on the amendment until we take testimony. We have a number of groups that wish to testify. But Representative Paymar, why don't you tell us which part of the A11 amendment is the part that is new to the bill and that raises your concern?
I'm not sure I have the A11 amendment.
Can we get...
I have a reasonable facsimile of it, so I think I can...
Representative Paymar, we'll get it.
In a second. Mr. Chair, first of all, I'd like to thank you for... making some time available to hear this amendment. And I'd like to thank the administration and the nonpartisan staff for helping me draft the amendment. I understand the work that's been done to try to clarify the open meeting law. And let me just say to the committee that I don't come to this issue without some experience, although I've never been before your committee, Mr. Chair, and it's a pleasure to be here. And this is not the Data Privacy Act as well as open meeting law has not been something that I would consider my highest level of expertise, but I have served for 8 years on a local city council, and I've been in this body for 14 years. And I just happen to be an elected official that believes that we should shine as much light on the meetings and activities of government as we possibly can. And so that is what the amendment that I offered tries to do. It takes what the administration constructed and broadens it, in essence, by providing a definition of governmental power, which was not in the original bill. And it clearly expands the definition of public body. And I think that the language that we have, a multi-member advisory group, however named, by having just this simple language provides governmental entity, whether it be regional, state, or local, with the legislative intent that what we mean here is any working group, it could be a committee, it could be a task force, it could be any way that you might define it, but it has an express purpose to provide advice or recommendation to the governmental power on issues that may be before that body. So,
Representative Paymar, just are we on page two?
Yes.
2.13, is that where the new language starts?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it's on page 2. I should have walked you through the amendment. But 2.4 is the definition of governmental body, of governmental power, that's not in the original bill. And on line 2.9 is where the language begins on what a public body means. And on line 2.13, you'll see that the definition and the clarification of a multi-member advisory group, however named, that's where we get into the broadening the definition to include working groups.
So, Mr. Payman, we go all the way down through 2.26?
2.26, that's correct.
All right.
And the...
I'm just going to interrupt you one more time. Members, that's the real reason why we're here, is the substance of this section. The whole bill is before us, but it's this section that I had wanted to discuss in committee so that we would be able to have the testifiers that you see listed respond to the impact of this section. Representative Paymar.
Okay, Mr. Chair, that is correct. And I just want to say there is some language at the bottom of page 2 that you should be aware of that's also new, that one of the concerns about my amendment had to do with what happens if a county board or a school board or a city council created an advisory group, and these are, active citizens in your community, and they somehow meet and inadvertently they're meeting with other members of the community, and someone raises the issue of whether this is a violation of the open meeting law. So in order to allay some of the concerns that the bill might have too broad a net and then bring two people here who inadvertently are meeting and not intentionally trying to violate the open meeting law and cause them to be subject to penalty, or for that matter to lose their position as an elected official, that the penalty, and Ms. Dyson might be able to help me out here, that these individuals would not be personally liable and would not forfeit their office if there was a violation. So that is really what the amendment tries to do. It tries to broaden the definition of a public body by including advisory groups. And I must say, members, that I realize that our own structure here is governed by Section 3.055 of statute. But I would hope that, and one of the reasons that I brought this forward is I think the legislature really needs to take a look at its own process also. And I know you don't have time to do that this session, and maybe this bill, is not ready to move this session or not. I don't know. I was not trying to obstruct let me finish if I could, Mr. Chair, one second. What you were trying to move forward here, because I do think this was a step in the right direction. But I know from being here, I just have to say, if the public knew how some decision-making occurred around here, I think they would be aghast. And maybe that's just the way it'll always be. But quite frankly, I'm one who thinks that I have nothing to hide, what I say, what I do, what our committees do. And frankly, we create a lot of working groups and advisory groups in this body. And, the public never knows about them. The press never knows about it. And decisions are being made. Now, you can say, well, decisions aren't being made. Only recommendations are being brought to the committee or to the governing body. But that's really only half the truth, in my view. So I'm into shining a big light over this place and all through the state of Minnesota. Now, you're going to hear, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, you're going to hear a lot of people get up here and say, well, what about this? What about that? They're going to bring up a million different scenarios how people are going to get entrapped because of this amendment. And I would suggest to you that you'll never have a perfect bill, but this amendment brings us partway there. With that, I stand for question.
Representative Paymar, this committee did spend the better part of a year making recommendations to change the rules of the House prior to the start of this legislative session. Some of those were incorporated into the rules, but I think you find a welcome committee as far as openness in government, in particular changing the rules of this body so that there is public input. And to illustrate the point, that's the reason why I had the bill pulled back into committee, so that we could have public testimony on an extremely controversial amendment and expanding the scope of this bill. Members, we have a list of testifiers, and I've asked them to focus on the substance of the amendment, and I hope Representative Paymar can stay with us to respond to those questions. Representative Anderson, you have a question?
Mr. Chair, can I just say one thing?
Yes,
I'm supposed to be in a conference committee, but I'm going to stay here until someone tells me I need to vote.
Okay.
If that's okay with you.
We appreciate that.
All right.
Thank you, Representative Paymar. Representative Anderson, did you have a question? All right. The first person, or the first group on the list, Kent Sulem. I think I saw him. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record. And again, I want to remind testifiers that we can focus on the Paymar Amendment at this time. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kent Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. And we'd like to thank you for giving us an opportunity to talk about the proposed Paymar Amendment today. We certainly understand the concern of wanting to make sure that public business is conducted in the open, and that is a very legitimate issue. However, it's also important to think about what are the consequences of any legislation being brought, and I think you would all agree that it should never be the outcome, intended or otherwise, of legislation to promote or see an increase in litigation and the costs associated with that, and or to have a chilling effect on other legitimate public purposes, and we believe this amendment would do both. There are certain groups, like a planning commission and other types of advisory commissions that exist at the township level and other units as well, that should be subject to the open meeting law, and I think most of us, when we do our training for our members, try to err on the side of caution and explain to our elected officials that these types of bodies, when there are very definitive ongoing tasks and statutory obligations, that they need to follow the open meeting law. However, there's also a number of situations where you have an advisory group, and the courts have consistently held that advisory groups that are purely advisory are not subject to the open meeting law. Some things that come about at the township level, right now townships follow the county for planning and zoning. If they wish to do their own planning and zoning, they do establish a planning commission, and again, we would say that that needs to be subject to the open meeting law. But it's not uncommon for a group of residents to come and say, hey, we think the township should explore this. We think we ought to do something in this arena. And the town board said, well, we don't have the staff. We don't have the resources. And the citizens will say, well, we'd be willing to work. Is there a liaison we can work with? And so you end up with a comment, all right, Supervisor Smith, you can be the liaison to this group of residents, and if they want to talk, you know, they're going to sit down with Ms. Jones and Mr. Adams and, you know, talk a little bit about township side of things, but then they're going to bring back their research and their recommendations. We'll have a public hearing. We'll have the public discussion, so all decisions are made in the public eye. Is that group now subject to the open meeting law? Because it has been acknowledged that there's going to be this liaison connection meeting with and acknowledging perhaps the creation of this advisory group. I would say in most situations, we would argue that's not an appointment, but it may be, because it's been acknowledged on the record, we are creating this task force, this working group, whatever name, that's an important line, however named, whatever issue you give to it, we're acknowledging it on the record as being an advisory group to our town board. If you were to take that away, by making all this subject to open meeting law, you're going to have a lot of work that simply cannot get done. If you subject these members to the open meeting law, it's true, as Representative Paymar said, that he intended to remove the penalty provision. That doesn't remove the litigation to say, are you now subject or are you not subject? If they're found to be subject to the open meeting law, even though everybody thought they were exempt, what is the penalty? The default for most unnamed statutory violations, I believe, is a misdemeanor, which carries with it $700 to a fine, a year in jail. That is the potential ramifications of this. Now, if you're a volunteer who suddenly says, well, I would serve, but I might be subject to lawsuit, I don't know what the penalty exactly will be because we're exempt from this, but we don't know what the other penalties might exist, I'm not going to be insured because the town board is telling me you're not a group. We don't view you as an association of the township, so we're not insuring you. Now I've got to hope my homeowners will pick it up, or I've got to borrow a lot of money to try to provide my own defense in order to find out what happens with this litigation. And that's a real chilling effect, particularly in small rural areas, on being able to work properly with volunteers and advisory types of groups. As was stated by Ms. Beyer-Kopinski, this bill, as it worked its way through the process, was meant to codify existing law so we can clarify during our training what happens. It doesn't go as far as we would have liked in some areas. It doesn't go as far as others would like to go. But to take this amendment now and it greatly expand and undo case law without seriously considering all the ramifications of it, we just think is a very unwise thing to do at this time. We do, however, remain very open to ongoing dialogues. We've had some conversations with others that have been proponents of further changes to say, you know, how do we better clarify the terms? How do we bring in the appropriate kinds of committees and advisory groups and not the volunteer ones that get caught up because of well-intentioned efforts that now nail you because of the broad language of this amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I've got three members who have questions, and I believe they're to you. So, Representative Merle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, it would help me especially understand the amendment if I could ask Ms. Dyson if there is a legal definition to the phrase transacting public business.
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow, I'm not sure. I don't know of a specific definition, but I can look into it for you.
Yeah, Representative Morrow and members, if we're focusing on the amendment, just give us the line, too, would you
please? Okay, yes, I will. And Mr. Chair, I was referring on the amendment to lines 2.7, 2.8. And Mr. Chair, the reason I was asking for the definition is, as I look at the definition of governmental power, 2.4 to 2.6, regulate, license, enact, make policy, et cetera, it seems to me that that may be the ability, say, of the school board or of the city council, but an advisory group may not actually have that ultimate power. So that's why I was asking for the definition of who can actually transact business, and can advisory groups transact business or just recommend to the higher body what it should do in transacting public business? I think it's a question we need to answer.
Mr. Sloan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, that's an issue that has been discussed over time, but I can tell you with the way this amendment works, just another example at our level, we've had situations where people will want to use the township hall. You know, there aren't a lot of community centers or community rooms out in the rural areas, and they'll want to have use of the town hall. Well, one of the definitions of governmental power is determine the use of public resources. Use of that town hall would be a determination of use of resources. Now, again, a group comes and says, well, let's research, let's investigate the policies, how do other rental agreements work? And if the supervisor says, all right, Supervisor Smith, why don't you be available to work with Mr. Jones and Mr. Adams and do the research on what others are doing and bring us back the research? Mm-hmm. Under this proposal, that may very well trigger an open meeting law issue, even though the citizens would do it on their own, may or may not bother to contact the liaison back to the town board, and now they've got a violation of the open meeting law because they are advising on the use of public resources.
Representative Payne,
Chair, this is an example. I'm kind of glad I actually don't serve on your committee after just hearing the beginnings of this debate. This is just an example of just sort of like taking the intent of an amendment and twisting it around. That was a good question, Representative Morrow, but I think if you look at the definition of governmental powers, the intent here is to define the local units of government that would be establishing the advisory committees or the task forces, et cetera, et cetera. It's clear if you read down into the amendment that it's whether the governmental power establishes the task force. So what the witness is saying is not relevant, or certainly is not the intent of the maker of that amendment. And I don't know if Ms. Dyson can clarify that.
Let's go to Mr. Solem first, and we'll go to Ms. Dyson.
Representative Paymar, I think that's exactly the point, is the unintended consequences that legislation can have. Because the language here says a group, however named, by resolution, ordinance, or order, but, you know, we don't know. We discussed for quite some time yesterday what does another order mean, or makes the appointments of, and as I said, you know, it's not at all unlikely. We have these situations. The examples I'm giving are the actual types of things that we deal with all the time. And now if you get that statement made, it isn't a matter of what the intent was. The language says if the appointments were made. And if a court says, well, you've acknowledged it, you created this informal group, however you intended it, this is what you ended up doing under the language of the statute. It's not at all just a hypothetical scenario. It is based on real types of things that occur and the unintended consequences of the language, which is why we're saying we're not opposed to trying to bring in some of the groups that have been acknowledged, but this language doesn't get us there in a way that we can be comfortable with, and we're willing to keep working.
Ms. Dyson, can you clarify this?
Mr. Chair, would you...
Well, Representative Paymer, I think, wanted a clarification. Are we still working on lines 2.4 through 2.6? Is that the...
Chair, that's correct. That's the definition of governmental power, which is essentially saying that's the city council, that's the county board, that's the state agency, that's the school board, and it's the governmental power creating the advisory group, however named. So there's two separate things we're talking about, the broad governmental entity and then the entity that it's creating, which is the advisory group. And that's the significant difference I think needs clarification to Representative Morrow's question. Or maybe I've got it wrong.
All right. Ms. Dyson?
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Paymar is correct in what the way this was structured, that governmental powers, it ties into the definition of public body, the governmental multi-member state, region, or local appointed or elected body with governmental powers. So that's the appointing body that would be appointing the task force that has the governmental powers, not the task force. But also, I would, Representative Morrow, you had asked about the transacting or transact public business. I just, even though I didn't have a definition for you, it is an existing law. It's part of the stricken language, so that's incorporated into the new definition.
So, Ms. Dyson, to Mr. Sulem's point, is he interpreting the statute or the proposed amendment correctly?
Well, if I may, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Mr. Sulem.
What I was trying to say is I'm not arguing the definition of the government powers. What I'm saying is this amendment, the way it's structured, would say that if you have a town board which has governmental power, I don't think any of us argue that a town board would have governmental powers, appoints these this advisory group, however named, to advise it on the use of governmental powers, that advisory group is now subject to the open meeting law. And what we're saying is that it's that when you have under current case law, when it's purely advisory, they are not subject, and you have a number of scenarios where the governing body doesn't believe they're making the appointment, but because of the way things occur out there, it's not at all unlikely a court would say that was an appointment. You have acknowledged it on the record that, okay, this person is the liaison to work with these two people. Now, that is an appointment under this statute, quite conceivably. Do we know for sure? Not until we've litigated. And that's my point, is that you now have those two residents on this, whatever you want to call it, because, again, the statute says, however named. They get together. They have a meeting. They never even talked to the town board liaison. But somebody, the other thing that you keep in mind here is, in our experience, most open meeting lawsuits are not brought for some noble purpose. They're brought as retaliation because they're mad about something else. I mean, that's just reality. They get tacked on to another piece of litigation. They get brought out to say, ha-ha, I now have you. And now they can go after those two supervisors and say, well, wait a minute. Town board says, well, we don't believe we have made an appointment. But at this meeting, they said, okay, we're creating this liaison to work with these two people to come back and advise. Now, those two volunteers don't even know that they're subject to the open meeting law, don't make the follow-up, but because of what occurred at the meeting, that is deemed an appointment.
All right. I have two more members that have questions. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sulem, as I read lines 10 through 20, this is a formally appointed advisory committee by the governmental body that presumably would meet and conduct its business in public. And so I don't see, I mean, the scenario of that you mentioned with a couple of citizens talking informally because they feel that they were empowered somehow by the governmental body to make a decision, that doesn't seem like it's part of this 10 through 20 looks very constrained to me to be a formal body, advisory body, task force, working group appointed by the governing body. And I think isn't this amendment just saying that that group will conduct its business in public? I've been on a couple of these prior to being elected. One, I think, was advertised. There were members of the public there. We conducted important business. Another didn't even have formal minutes, and no one knew about it. So it seems like this amendment would address some of the problems with that second example. Is that my agreement? Maybe Mr. Paymarker, Representative Paymarker, could comment too.
It's my understanding that that is perhaps the intent. And as I stated at the beginning of my testimony, I think there are ways that we can try to work towards getting there. I can tell you that before the bill itself, I know we're trying to confine it to the amendment, but as this bill worked its way through the process, the local governing entities did toss out suggestions of how do we create this definition, and they were not viewed acceptable to other proponents of taking it even broader. And so we came back saying, all right, we think this is what case law says. They came back with broader definitions. It's the ambiguity that is the problem for us when we're saying, you know, we err on the side of caution. When you have a truly established, absolutely no questions doubt, this task force is established for these purposes, this assigned task, et cetera, most of us would advise, yeah, that should come back through the open meeting law process. There are, however, situations where that isn't going to occur, and there can be very legitimate public purpose reasons why you wouldn't have it subject to the open meeting law, and those are not being discussed. So that's what we're seeing. What we need is the interim. Right now, the bill is passed originally out of this body, codifies existing case law. There's a lot of disagreement about how is the best way to go forward with an amendment that's clear to both sides, removing all ambiguity, and we're not there yet.
All right. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my first comment is that it's not necessarily the job of the committee to wait until there's consensus and move forward. I think the job of the committee is to look at the facts, look at the amendment, and find out what the best policy is. And I wonder, to start with, if Mr. Sulem or Representative Paymar, Mr. Sulem, you raised this issue of a misdemeanor and personal liability for these individuals, and we did touch on lines 2.30 and 2.31. And it was my understanding from Representative Paymar's testimony that there was some effort to shield from liability private citizens engaged as volunteers in those advisory groups. And I wonder if that's incorrect or if you could elaborate further on that.
Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, what this language does in the most recent version of the bill or the amendment would say you're not subject to the penalty provisions as provided under Chapter 13D, the open meeting law. But again, that doesn't mean that you're not subject to the litigation over the original allegations, and it doesn't mean that you're exempt from all penalties. And I believe some of the next testifiers will elaborate on some of that. It just says you're not subject to this group of penalties. So then that leaves the question, what penalties do exist? And as I stated, it's my understanding, and I'm not a prosecutor, so I may be wrong on this, but my understanding is that in most situations where there isn't a stated penalty, the default is that it's now a misdemeanor, and the penalty for a misdemeanor is generally $700 and or a year in jail. And so it's saying you're exempt from the 13D penalties, but not from the litigation of was there a violation, not from injunctive type of efforts that may or may not be applicable, and not from potential misdemeanor applications. Now, was it the intent to create those as consequences? I'm not saying it is. I'm saying that's the result of the language that exists.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Sulem, to Representative Paymar, I think some clarity on that issue would be helpful. To me, it is not adequate just to raise hypothetical scenarios and use that as a reason to defeat the amendment. I'd like some information about that and to make actually an informed decision about what consequences actually would arise. But I guess the real question I have for you, Mr. Sulem, is why wouldn't we have a presumption that there is an open meeting? And that's, to me, what this what this language really does. It's broad, but it basically says that if you are using public resources, and that's an important and in line 2.19, if you're using public resources and you are appointed or created by order to do something and to provide advice, there should be an open meeting. And what I haven't heard are this any specific reasons why we wouldn't presume that that group of people meets in public. Because there could be no purpose for them to meet but to help influence the public debate. And it seems to me that you're using the public's money, and the perspective that we should bring to this is that of the public's right to know, not as the administrative or political body's convenience in making decisions. So I don't know why we wouldn't have that presumption.
Mr. Suleiman,
Mr. Chair, I will just end because I know that there's a number of other people that have some very specific examples that might help shed light. And again, I think where the issue comes is that the goal and objective of having openness is one thing. How you achieve it in terms of the unintended consequences and the chilling effect it can have on being able to have volunteers in an advisory capacity. Right now the focus is on, I think, the types of groups that many of us would say, yes, we agree in certain situations it does make sense that, yeah, that should be done in open meeting law. Those ongoing, permanent types of task forces or committees or commission. What we're saying is we believe this language goes beyond that, and that's why we're saying we tried to bring language as this bill worked its way through the process, could not reach consensus. This language creates a number of unintended consequences in our opinion, and I think you'll hear some specific examples from my fellow testifiers.
All right, members, I'm going to go to the next testifying list. Tom Deans, the Minnesota School Board. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Deans. I'm legal counsel of the School Board Association. As was stated earlier, and Mr. Sulem's gone through some of the items that I was going to cover, but this bill was originally a bill just to codify the existing law so that people could find it. We think that the amendment is a huge expansion of that existing law, And we can't support that. The existing law has been that if the group is advisory only, they have no ability to make any decision. They just present the recommendations to the governing body, that group is not subject to the open meeting law. School districts receive input all the time from every kind of group and everyone that's out there, citizens, parents, businesses, taxpayers, academics, anybody. Everyone is an expert on schools because almost everybody went to school and they think that's one of the things that they do know something about. So everyone likes to give advice. Now often we encourage citizen involvement to improve school operations or to solve problems or to have citizens come up with proposed solutions to problems that affect us, and one of these methods that we use to get that input is to involve parents and community members and taxpayers through advisory groups. Now, some of those groups are very formal in nature. Some of those groups are absolutely rump kind of groups that are going to provide you some advice, but they're groups that we've established or that we have allowed to be established. That could have been 50 years ago. It could be today. Some have school board members acting as liaisons so that there's somebody to report back to the school board on what this group is doing. Other ones, they don't. There's a myriad of ways that we do this. Sometimes we tell them, we'd like your advice on this issue or this proposal, and go out there and put something together and bring it back to us. And we don't tell them where to do it, we don't tell them when to do it, we don't tell them how to do it. The idea is that they're going to bring us back some advice, and they can they'll meet where they meet. They may meet in private homes, they may meet in the car, they may meet on the phone. They may meet wherever. These are citizens. These are people out in the community. They're not, you know, school board members and the like in all cases. They put together this stuff and they bring it back. When they give it to the board can agree with it or they can disagree with it or they can modify it or they can do whatever they want to. The school board part, once it gets back to the school board, that's entirely subject to the open meeting law. But the part where the citizens are out there thinking about what they want to suggest to the school board is not subject to the open meeting law. Now, those people may receive some sort of public resources in order to carry out what they want. That public resource could be when they come, we'll make copies of their recommendations so that they can be handed around to the other school board members or they can be made available to the members of the public. That's use of public resources. We may let them meet at the school district without charging them for it. That's use of public resources. Types of situations where this comes up. Sometimes we're proposing a building program, and we've got several different ways that we could go about this. The district will allow the establishment of a group to give us their recommendations on these various things. Sometimes you get people from the vote yes and the vote no groups, and you get them on those committees, and you let them think about what they want to do and how they want, what recommendation they want to do. So it's something that they can live with, and they bring that back to the school district. You have curriculum revisions that are going on all the time in school districts. Sometimes those are teacher-only groups. Sometimes those have a school board liaison. Sometimes they have parents on those groups. Those are generally not considered subject to the open meeting law. The after graduation, the after prom kinds of committees that are going to make recommendations to the school board on things that you do. Those committees aren't ever treated as this, and people that are serving on them don't think that they're serving on a public body, but under this definition, they'll be made a public body. School safety planning. We try to get input from parents and taxpayers. You have booster groups that are providing input to you on how you can do fundraising for the football team or for the hockey team or how you can support those kinds of activities. Many of the PTAs, the boards have adopted resolutions authorizing the creation of those PTAs and authorizing them to operate within those schools. Those would come here. In these hard times, we get recommendations like you do. I've seen all your committees do this. If we have to make cuts, we got to cut $5 million in the next year. How would you recommend that we make those cuts? That's the kind of input, you know, that we're looking for. We're trying to get input to solve problems. We're trying to get a sense of consensus as to what the taxpayers can support.
Mr. Dean, I've got a Representative Winkler, I think, wants to ask a question.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess my follow-up question to you, Mr. Dean, is if the school board takes a formal action to request a group, appoints a group, to give them advice, and the language of the bill says provides resources for the group's work. The school board decides to provide the resources for the group to do the work. And it could be about a building. It could be about financing for a building. If you have a member of the community who knows something about school buildings or has a strong opinion about school buildings or somebody who knows something about public finance or cares about public finance or there's an initiative to bring local foods into the school and you appoint some group of people and there are other people in the community who have an opinion, if you're using public resources and it's a formal action by the public body to appoint people, why would you not have a presumption that the public gets to have input? And I came to the meeting actually with an open mind. I didn't really know where this was going, but I'm looking for some reason why you can't be held to that standard.
Mr. Dean.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, who do you want to hold to that standard? The school board or these moms that are and dads that are coming in to try to be on these advisory committees. That's who you're holding to the standard, not the school board.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dean, we did talk briefly already about exempting them from the open meeting penalty requirements in lines 2.30 and 2.31. I think we need some further clarification on that point about other penalties, etc. But the point is, I think the burden falls on the public body making the decision to establish or appoint the advisory group and provide public resources for it. The burden falls on that public body to know what the law is, to make it, to do the appointment, and to provide those volunteers with the resources they need to give their advice. I just don't I'm open to a reason why they shouldn't be able to do that. And maybe if there are good reasons, we should put those exceptions into the law instead of, and then we're creating a presumption that it's public unless some exception applies, rather than creating a presumption that it's not public.
Mr. Dean?
Well, we don't necessarily appoint them. Sometimes we just allow them to be created, and that brings it under the law, too. We allow for this group to, for a group to be formed. That comes under the way you've got this structured as well. The use of the public resources, can be pretty minimal. That copying charge or whatever when they come back, or the use of the room. We're not paying these people to do this. But anyway, these people, they're not trained in open meeting law compliance. We go through training for our own people. It's not always easy, but if you have a group of parents that are going to make recommendations on textbook adoption or something, they're not trained in the open meeting law. They may do this stuff on their own.
Representative Winkler.
But Mr. Chair, just to that point, if they do it on their own, they're not being appointed by resolution, ordinance, or order, or an appointment by the body. If the body takes the initiative to appoint them, or to create this group formally, and there is the use of public resources, that's a different scenario than a group of people who are concerned about the content of a textbook meeting in a church basement or at the atheist assembly hall to talk about what's in there and come back and make their presentation to the board meeting. It's a totally different situation between the imprimatur of a public institution saying we want your advice and a private group of citizens meeting on their own to bring their own advice.
Mr. Dean?
If that group of, Mr. Chair, if that group of citizens has been allowed to be formed under a resolution that the board adopted, then they would be subject to that. Or if we passed a motion that, that we would be listening to their recommendations. One of the problems is there's going to be, and Mr. Sulem already covered this, but there's going to be some suits that as to whether or not they are subject to it. If they've been allowed to go on their own, they may have to defend those on their own. We may not have had any control over what they're doing, and we're liable to have to do it. It's not the award of attorney's fees to the other side. You've exempted them from that. Somebody's got to pay their own attorney's fees when they come. On your other point, the rule is that if you have a statute, the rule in Minnesota is that if you have a statute of general application and it does not provide a penalty, the potential penalty for violation of that statute is a misdemeanor. And exempting them from the particular penalties here means that there is no penalty, which would mean that you'd be under the general rule.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dean,
Representative
Winkler. That issue needs some further clarification and discussion.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Paymore, as we were hearing from the School Board Association, I'm thinking about when I was the school board chair, and I'm also thinking about my high school daughter, who's serving on some committees in high school right now. I know that I'm not trying to go down the hypothetical or what if, but I would ask you to at least consider language that would exempt groups, advisory groups that consist of students, maybe students and teachers, but students meeting during a school day. I don't know that those advisory groups should become public meetings. I worry about minors, I worry about photography, I worry about opening up the high school or any school, really, as a public meeting. So I'm asking you to at least consider, I don't know that you mean to include students that are being asked to advise the school board on whether it's healthy foods or sports or what have you. So I'm asking you to consider exempting student participant groups.
Representative,
I'd be the first to say that this is somewhat a work in progress. It came up rather rapidly, and I have not had time to either work with the stakeholders or with staff to come up with the best possible language. Again, I said at the beginning of my presentation that there's probably a lot of what-ifs. But again, as Representative Winkler pointed out on lines 2.14, this would be the governmental body that would be creating this task force or the advisory board. I'm assuming this would happen in public. They'd be saying that this entity is being created for the following purposes. And I just want to say that Mr. Dean has, I think, made my point on several occasions here, as long as I have the floor real quickly, Mr. Chair. I mean, if you have a situation, and I don't know what school district has, and I've never served on a school board, but I know how contentious it is when you're closing schools down. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say three members of a school board decide they're going to meet with, you know, X amount of parents or whatever to make these decisions. They do these decisions behind closed doors. There's no record of it. There's no public hearing. The press isn't there. They make a recommendation back to the board, and boom, you've got a decision to your school closures. The same thing on budget cuts. My school district has a $27 million budget deficit to make up. Should we say that three of those school board members should meet at school board Hornstein's house and work this all out, come back, and there's no discussion, there's no debate, there's no opportunity for the public to hear how these decisions were made. I'm not saying that all of these meetings have to be recorded or televised. Are you telling me I have to go? No. That I'm just saying that the public should be notified where they are, give dates, and I don't know how to work all that out. Again, it's somewhat of a work in progress, but I think you understand the intent of what I'm trying to accomplish here.
All right. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tamar, or others, really, I'm wondering if one of the issues here is just formality versus informality. I'm looking particularly on line 2.19, and I understand Mr. Dean to be saying that, you know, what happens if, for example, he gave the prom night hypothetical. What if at a school board there are three sets of parents who say the prom night party should be, you know, at the school, and three say it should be at a hotel or something like that, and then the chair of the school board says, why don't the six of you go in and meet offline and come back to us at our next meeting? Do we need something, would that be a direct appointment or not? Maybe we need to say, and I'm just throwing this out there, on line 2.19, after the word directly, add the words and formally. Meaning it's not enough for an office holder at a meeting to say, hey, there's obviously some controversy here. Why don't the six of you go meet and come back to us at the next meeting? That's not enough. It's got to be, the direct appointment has to be something more than just a suggestion that interested party who are at odds with one another meet. I think maybe putting that word formal in there is okay. It seems to me that if we did that, then the member of the public body, be it a school board, city council, whatever, could say, I mean, that would be the magic word, I would imagine. From the standpoint of litigation, they could say, look, my informal recommendation, did you get that, everyone? Informal, not formal. You could say it loudly into the microphone so everyone knows. My informal recommendation would be that the six of you go and solve this, see if you can solve it, and come back and report to us. I want to clarify, this is not a formal suggestion. It's an informal suggestion. There are trigger words like that that could avoid litigation and I think provide some clarity. It's a suggestion, Representative Paymar, to your amendment. I won't formally offer it unless you say it's okay.
Yes. We've gone down the suggestion road in this committee, whether it's an amendment or a suggestion, and this is a suggestion. Representative Paymar, Mr. Deans, who wants to respond to that?
Mr. Chair, if I just may, I'd be fine with adding that language, but I don't know if you want to work on the bill at this point.
Well, I think that's why it's here. I'd prefer working here than on the floor. Mr. Dean.
Mr. Chair, the problem is you won't know whether Representative Simon's suggestion worked in stating it that way until you get to court. and you find out what the court decides, whether that was a formal or an informal deal. Some of these things are more contentious than others. Lots of them, the prom thing probably isn't going to court, but certainly some of the other things can. I think what you do here, however, is that you create enough ambiguity for these volunteers and these people that are being asked to provide input that they say, hey, we're not taking a chance on getting dragged into some legal fight on this thing at where maybe we've got some potential of criminal things, maybe we've got to pony up some legal fees if we get sued, if we're doing this in the way that you think is the wrong way. We think that that's going to stifle and chill that citizen input, and we think rather than opening up meetings, this is going to close down public input, and I guess we're just going to, we'll just leave it at that. The situations that have been discussed, I listened to a retired teacher talk about being on a curriculum committee where they had worked all summer, and it was all employees, except they had a liaison to the board. Under this, that curriculum committee that was providing advice to the board on the revised curriculum would be subject to this law. It does not make any sense. Oh, and the one final thing is the comment that Representative Paymar had made, where we didn't necessarily want to have all these groups follow all the formalities of the law and have the agendas and have the minutes and have all that is what this does, is it makes you totally subject to the open meeting law. So you have to follow all of those provisions and have information available and allow anybody that you want to come to the meeting at your house or whatever.
Representative
Sam. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will now formally offer the amendment to the Paymar Amendment. And the amendment would be, if I could, Mr. Chair, on line 2.19, after the word directly, add the words and formally.
Right. Ms. Dyson, can you explain whether this works or not?
Excuse me. Mr. Chair and members, it works, but my comment would be that formal action by the governmental body is typically by ordinance or resolution, or in the case of a commissioner of a state agency, by order. And so it might be better to be more specific about that they're appointed directly in the resolution, ordinance, or order.
I'm not sure that clarified it. Representative Simon. And the Simon Amendment is now before us. To the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I think I understand Ms. Dyson's comments. I would just say that this whole clause about or makes the appointments directly assumes that there's some other way other than an ordinance or order to effectuate this. Otherwise, it would just end after order. I don't know Representative Paymar's thinking going into this or the draftsmanship, but that very clause assumes that it's not just by ordinance or order. It could be something else. It could be a direct appointment apart from an ordinance or order. I don't know enough about the intricacies here to know whether that's true. I just assume it's true because it's in the text. And if that's true, if there's some way other than ordinance or order to do it, then I'm seeking to make clear that it would be a formal and direct appointment. And again, I just think that provides trigger language so that if at the spur of the moment at a meeting, the chair of a school board or the head of a city council wants to say, look, why don't you all informally go off and meet on this? And that would be sort of an anti-litigation trigger word, it seems to me. But I defer to those who have more expertise.
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, I was just conferring with Ms. Byer-Krupinski. And in terms of the drafting, I was trying to cover different scenarios, and as the discussion continues, things become more clear. But what she was suggesting is that provides for the multi-member advisory group to be formed under resolution or order ordinance and makes the form appointments directly. Because that seems to get at what you're talking about, is a formal creation of this advisory board. And
All right, Ms. Dice, you want to run that past us one more time?
Okay. The amendment would be
right.
On page 2, line 19, delete the first comma and or. So delete comma or the third or and insert and. So that on 2.18 and 2.19, it would read, excuse me, provides for the multi-member advisory group to be formed under resolution or ordinance or order and makes the appointments directly.
Well, we still have the Simon amendment before us.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Simon.
I'll withdraw that amendment and in favor of the one that Ms. Dyson just enunciated.
Representative Simon withdraws his amendment, and then the new Simon amendment is the one that Ms. Dyson just described. Representative Paymar, you want to comment?
I support the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Any other? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. If the purpose of this is to try to make meetings and decisions more open, in effect, we're just sidestepping, and the result could be the same. This informal group could come back with a recommendation, which could be acted upon, which is what we're trying to alleviate in the first place. So, yeah, I see the point of trying to somewhat lessen the severity of this amendment, but it goes back to what we're trying to accomplish in the first place, and it doesn't do that.
Representative Marquardt, to the Simon Amendment.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And in going off a little bit what Representative Anderson just said, I'm worried that this may actually shed more darkness on this whole situation because it's an overkill. I'm thinking about when I was mayor, we had a group of senior citizens that got together to talk about senior needs. Or at Dilworth, Glenn and Felton, I think almost every school, they have prom committees. The junior parents, mainly mothers, get together and plan the prom and the post-prom. And they end up using, like, the post-prom. They have to use the concessions, and they have to usually use the gym for the post-prom. So they're using some funding. And what's going to happen here is that either people, if they have to go through, you know, all of this stuff, announcements, they could have the press there and all these type of things. With these types of committees, you're not going to find members that would do this totally voluntary. Or you're going to have a school board that's going to say, we're not going to publicly announce this prom committee appointed, or we won't give it any funding, which basically could strangle it also. And so I think you've got some unintended consequences for committees and people that are doing this volunteer to make something work. And if they have to go through all this other stuff, you're going to have people not be part of this, or you're going to have no funding for the group, or the school boards will just circumvent it and say, we just won't recognize this prom committee like it doesn't exist, and you're still going to have the meetings going on anyway. So I just see this as an overkill in many situations.
We're on the Simon Amendment. Representative Paymar, you want to?
I'd respond to Representative Marquardt
yes,
at some point, but no, Mr. Chair, I said at the beginning of my presentation, you could have a million. I'm sure every member here would have a what if or, you know, what about this situation? There'll always be questionable, ambiguous situations when it comes to the open meeting law. I think it's clear what my intent is here is to provide the public with an opportunity to scrutinize advisory boards that are doing some fairly significant work on behalf of governmental powers. And that's what I'm trying to get at. If we had time and we could think through some possible language that would deal with the situation that you raise, I'd be happy to do that.
All right. We're on the Simon Amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay.
Nay.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Winkler.
I also have an amendment to offer.
All right.
And it responds to Representative Morrow's point about students. I guess he's not here. He did indicate his support for it. And I asked Ms. Dyson to correct me if this doesn't work. But on line 2.17, it says comprised solely of the body's employees or contractors. And it seems to me we could simply add the word students into line 2.17 in that list, and you could cover a situation where students and teachers are meeting during the school day and they wouldn't be covered by this.
Ms. Dyson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, you're suggesting that on that the sentence then would read, this does not include an advisory group comprised solely of the body's employees, students, or contractors?
Ms. Dyson, that's my suggestion. That's my motion, if that works.
Ms. Dyson, does that work?
Mr. Chair, it works. There might be a students implies it's a school body, and this covers all bodies. You might want a separate sentence dealing with students. But yes, I mean, to the extent that any public body has students, it would do what you're talking about.
Mr. Chair, I guess I need to withdraw the motion, but I wonder if Ms. Dyson could just write a sentence that we could offer a written amendment to cover
We're going to be here a little bit longer, so if Ms. Dyson, among her other activities, wants to see if she can come up with a sentence while we're doing other things, multitasking. Members, Mr. Dean, do you have anything else to offer?
No, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to say, however, the one last point is that I totally agree with Representative Marquardt's with his last comments. That is exactly what's going to happen, whether that was directed at the Simon Amendment or whatever. That is what's going to happen if you adopt this provision. Exactly what he stated is what's going to happen. Those people are not going to do it the way that they've done it in the past, and they're going to be reticent to do it, and they're not going to be willing to take that kind of a personal risk.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Ann Higgins? Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. And if we can focus again on the Paymar Amendment, and we don't need to cover what's already been covered, but.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ann Higgins. I work at the League of Minnesota Cities. I think I will just point out one thing. Our general counsel would have preferred to be here rather than myself. He has given us advice on this, and his very strong view is that, much as you've heard from Mr. Deans, the nuances and the difficulties that arise out of this current draft we consider to be difficult to overcome and difficult for cities to effectively conduct their business with the help of citizens in an engaged manner, which we've been encouraging because we, in many cases, as you know, have cities that are very small, have no or very few people on staff. Therefore, the reliance on the public to provide us the means to have some discussion informally in a setting where they can gather ideas together and come back, not make decisions, not transact business, is something we rely on a great deal, and we're relying on it more and more. Secondly, although it refers to ordinance or other action formally by the governing body, very many cases exist where we're doing public improvements or other kinds of responsibilities at that public body where members of the City Council become aware that members of the public are concerned about how the decisions are going to be made at the public body, and they don't meet that often. Many times here in the Metro, City Councils meet twice a month. That is not the case in most of Minnesota. Therefore, in the time period between those council meetings, giving those folks an opportunity to get some information from their fellow residents in a particularly affected part of the city, or if it's a group of businesses that are directly affected in some manner, to just give assent to something to be going on in the meantime without any staff by the city involved, except to say, as has been said already, that meetings sometimes are held in public buildings and folks doing that work are not charged for it because it's just the way in which the community has operated for years and years. So I do appreciate the efforts that have been made, particularly about talking about stepping away from formal appointment, because many of these groups are not appointed directly, personally, each member by the City Council. Therefore, we would suggest that if that's not the case, that those folks are not subject And one final item, the open meeting law. It does require a lot of procedural steps that you have to be able to execute. I'm not sure at all. In fact, I'm pretty uncomfortable with the certainty that some of these groups could carry out those procedures without some assistance from city staff, or at the very least somebody who takes that responsibility to set up a schedule of meetings, to put out the information about a special meeting that's being held someplace else, and all the other intricacies or difficulties, not difficulties, but responsibilities that the open meeting law entails. I just know that we have been trying very hard to keep citizens engaged in the process, not to shut out the rest of the public from that process, but simply to help the city council members do their jobs.
Questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Paymer.
Mr. Chair, once again, I would say that Ms. Higgins has made my point just as Mr. Dean did. As a city council member, this would be, you know, a very convenient thing for me to do, is to say, you know, a couple of us will go meet with, you know, maybe someone from the zoning committee, some business people that may want to do something in a particular neighborhood. You know, let's just shut the rest of the neighborhood out. And then when it comes back to a formal agenda hearing or a committee meeting, we've got the advice that we need, and boom, the decision gets made. I can see her side to it, and every person who comes up to testify, I'm saying there's another side to it that cries out for some public scrutiny. And I don't know how we find the middle ground here, but that's what I was attempting to do.
Ms. Higgin?
I can only say again that I think these situations are what if. They often are exactly that. I think the point of a city council is to make sure, or a public body of any kind, is to make sure that their agenda indicates that they will be making a decision or considering a matter that anybody could come forward to the council, either at a public hearing if there is one, or in some other manner make their views known. But the fact that that group exists in the community is not being kept a secret. But it's true that they would not have to work on as many of the requirements for the process. I would just say that we need the flexibility to do it. I understand what Representative Paymar is trying to address, but I think it needs more work.
All right. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I guess I just also like to address this difference between advisory and formal action and conducting formal decision-making. And we're seeing an example of the important ways that those things happen right here in this committee. And that is that when the interested parties, or those who have the organizational capacity to be interested parties, all agree on something and they bring it back for decision making and they say, hey, we all agree. The tendency of the formal hearing or the formal decision making process is to rubber stamp it and move it through. And in fact, it was that advisory period or that time when the interested parties were meeting that the real decision gets made, and I think that's what cries out for the ability of other people to be able to come and discuss it. And we do have this broader issue of the legislature, but that's why we have expanded some of these rules in the legislature over time as well, to try to get to this point where if we are appointing somebody to go out and give us advice, you have to include members of the public who might not share your perspective.
Members, I'm told that taxes is in here at 10:30, and they will probably evict us. So we're going to have to stop. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been a very interesting discussion. And we've talked and heard from the school boards and cities and townships. We haven't really heard from the legislative side of it. And I'm just thinking through. There are a lot of caucuses, task forces, working groups, whatever. I'm frankly not aware if they're fully open-meetinged or not, but I'm recalling just a very recent experience when Representative Swales and Representative McFarland traveled around and went to service co-ops and got information. And if I recall correctly, I believe that Representative Swales indicated that she was formally charged with the responsibility of doing this. And as I would assume, maybe incorrectly, but I'm assuming that as they went around, they did not do that with public notification, without a tape recorder in the car, without the agenda and whatever. And I'm thinking that as we shed the light The light, as you started out, Representative Paymar, the light maybe first and foremost needs to be what we're doing here. And, you know, we actually subsequently to their visits, we just passed a law in the Minnesota House that took their recommendations and decided that, okay, this is all well and good, and we should do something formally with that. And so I appreciate what you're trying to do to bring this forward. I certainly do also appreciate everything that all of the testifiers have brought forth, because I'm a previous city council member, and I'm a mom. I've been on, served on different committees and done different things, and I really do have a fear that, and I've said this previously, that I don't want to see this going from the open meeting law to the broken meeting law. You know, the fact that we want public testimony and input and a wide variety of people coming forward, we need to try to figure out how we can best do that. But I really don't want it to become that my local city council decides that we make any and all decisions, and we only hear from people when they come before us in city council chambers during a meeting. So I'm concerned about that. But I was reminded of the experience with Swales and McFarland, and how they received great kudos for everything they did. But I would suspect they did that, and there wasn't a great amount of public input with regards to that.
Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Poppe, thank you for the comments. And as I said at the outset of my testimony, that there is language on line 2.26 that reiterates that this specifically that meetings of the legislatures are governed by section 3.055. I think the chair agrees with me to a point that this is something that the legislature should discuss. I'll give you an example. I have set up task forces and working groups. You can set them up without having the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate appoint them, which then becomes a more formal body. So the scenario that you raised was more of an informal meeting. It was fact-finding, et cetera, et cetera. I intend this, during the interim, to sit down with members of MSOP, the Department of Corrections, and some psychiatrists, and I asked Representative Morrow if he'd be interested, as a matter of fact, to look at the whole issue of sex offender treatment, because, you know, just the unsustainability of the cost at MSOP. I was hoping that this would be an informal meeting, but you know, that's a pretty big issue to be discussing in private, in my office or anywhere else. I think that should be open to the public. People should be able to sit down and listen to what we're talking about. I realize that what I'm suggesting here opens up all kinds of scenarios, but I think, the more sunshine we put on what we do and what other governmental entities do, I think the better. I think the more informed people will be, and, I feel strongly committed to it. I didn't realize when I offered this amendment that I'd be opening up so much, but how complicated this all is. And I don't know if my amendment is ready for prime time or not, quite frankly. But I do think we should be looking at all these issues.
Representative Poppe.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up, and perhaps I've been given the opportunity to make this comment. I do think that we have standing committees. I firmly believe in the value of standing committees at a city council, at a township level, certainly at the legislative level. I've appreciated the fact that the Government Operations Committee did spend a lot of time looking at rules. We had open meetings. We spent a lot of time doing that. I've been concerned about the number of working groups, task forces, caucuses, whatever. We have proliferated a number of groups in order to either give everyone a gavel or make everybody feel that they're more important than whatever. It really is something that concerns me, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to express that view, because I think we have the right number of standing committees, perhaps. Maybe we don't have the right focus for all of those standing committees. Maybe that's all work that needs to be done, but we have currently a situation where we can provide public testimony and agendas and all of that, and I just appreciate, again, the opportunity to be able to state that. Thank you.
Representative Winkler, did you wish to...
Yeah.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I just don't want to get something lost here. This amendment, as it's written now, requires the body to actually take some action to create the group and to appoint the members of the group.
Right.
That's, I mean, an example of that we've had in the last year was this issue of elections and absentee ballots. And we met at the Humphrey Institute. It was not public, but neither was it a group that was created as by a resolution of this committee or any other committee of the House. It was a group of people who met and talked and had no advisory, formal advisory capacity. It was the goal was to create a bill. And this resolution doesn't touch that kind of thing. I mean, this amendment doesn't touch that because you actually have to take action. But once you've taken the action to create it and say, we are giving you some public resources, we are formally requesting your advice, you are asking the community for information or feedback. And once you've done that, I don't know how you can avoid allowing the entire community to have a voice in that.
Ms. Higgin?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just one response very quickly. I know there are other people that need to testify. I'll give you an example. I understand, I think, what you're driving at, Representative Winkler. I serve on a commission for the city where I reside. That is a very formal process. Part of the actual commission I serve on is required by state law in order for a city to participate in the area. It has to do with historic preservation. And we go through a very formal process, and I've seen it in other cities as well, but I can't speak to every city, where in those instances there is a very recognizable series of actions that the city council moves through, including the interviewing of the folks who are going to serve, and then the setting of a responsibility at the staff level to watch that commission's operations. We do not just go off on our own and do our own thing. The schedule of meetings is posted and is put out months ahead of time and is put out on every vehicle the city has available to let the public know. And we meet in a specific area all the time, and if we change it, we have to take care of all the steps the city council takes. So we are a subset kind of the city council, even though we're not a committee, even though no city council members serve on it. I recognize, and I think the League of Cities has trained city elected officials and their administrative staff to follow that prescription. What we haven't done, and what we're concerned about the impact of, is trying to incorporate a lot of other more informal settings in which the appointments aren't directly made. Maybe some of the people who initially begin the process get designated, you two go off and try to do this, but they're put out on their own to try to get the process moving, and the city council doesn't have a direct role except to hear back from them when they come back with some information. My experience in those settings too is that many of those situations that Representative Paymar indicates that are fractious and so forth don't necessarily work out that well, and maybe we could be guided by some of that issue. But right now, I don't know what all the answers need to be in order to keep the public engaged.
All right. Members, I still have three people on the list to testify. Keith Carlson, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. Our organization also is opposed to this amendment as currently written, for many of the reasons that have already been enumerated here. I think what's failed to be identified, though, is the specific procedural concerns that we have with imposing the requirements of the open meeting law on volunteers that serve on our various advisory groups. These individuals perform a very important role for us in giving us advice on the programmatic areas in the instance of counties and social services, human services, public health, transportation, environment, and parks and recreation. And they also give air to these issues and help build consensus within the wider community before our boards take actions on these various issues. And we don't want to do anything that jeopardizes the volunteers that serve in those capacities right now. And we're afraid that this amendment would do that, because simply those individuals do not have the capacity do not have the time to deal with all the prescriptive requirements of the current open meeting law. Those requirements basically fall in four categories. One, that you post notice that meet the requirements of the law. The notice requirements for an existing council or board are very simple. You just keep a copy of your schedule at the principal office of the city or the county. That's all you have to do. With these advisory groups, they fall within the requirement of the law, as I would interpret it, that they're special meetings. And special meetings require that, one, that a notice be posted on the principal bulletin board of that group. I don't know what that would be with these advisory groups. Perhaps it's at the office of the school board, the county board, or the city. And two, that they provide mail notice at least 3 days ahead of time, the same requirements that apply to the posted notice, to any individuals that requested, or ultimately that they publish notice. Secondly, at the meeting itself, it cannot divert from the agenda identified on that notice. You know, something that certainly city councils, school boards, county boards are available to, something that an advisory volunteer group may not be cognizant of. Thirdly, that they must keep journals of the meeting's contents. Again, something that does not necessarily routinely occur. And finally, that printed materials used at that meeting must be available to the public at that meeting. We don't object to all these meetings occurring in public, but placing those burdens on these volunteers is simply not, in our estimate, practical. You've already had the discussion as to what the import would be if this same requirement was placed on the various working groups you have. You simply haven't provided notice of those meetings in the past. You haven't constrained yourself to a specific agenda on those, to my knowledge. You haven't provided printed materials to the public. You haven't kept journals of those meetings. So just think about if you were to impose those same requirements on yourselves. I'll just go on that. An important consideration of the open meeting law that's not apparent by looking at the statute is the interplay between the statute and the data practices law. There's an intimate relationship between what can be discussed at the meeting and what printed materials can be provided. Even though the open meeting law says everything has to be done in the open, the data practices law says if it's private, if it's confidential, you're constrained as to whether or not you do that. As a consequence, the Department of Administration and its advisory opinions have issued 7 opinions on what printed materials can be distributed, 3 opinions on what can be included in the record of the meeting, 2 on the recording of the meeting, 6 on what the contents or requirements are for the notice, 2 on the recordings, and 3 on the discussions of not public data. In addition, there are additional opinions that are specific to certain subjects or to the school boards. They have a 31-page PowerPoint as to, you know, just an overview of the law. They have one website or sub-website that exclusively deals with the notices. Again, asking our volunteers to meet all those requirements, I think, is going above and beyond what is reasonable to require of those individuals. As a result, the practical import of adopting this is that we would likely have to provide staffing for all these committees at a time when we're cutting back on the amounts of staff we have because of the financial concerns that we're facing with the cutback in state aids and with the limitations that are being placed on us by levy limits currently. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude. I think this isn't ready for prime time.
Representative Simon.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. As I read the amendment, as amended, the way to avoid all these burdens and complications is to avoid formal action. It seems pretty simple to me. All the things that you've described and others have described, which I understand and sympathize with, are easily avoidable under this. Just don't pass a resolution. I think it's okay at a meeting like this or any other, or a member of a school board or a county board or anyone to say, Joe and Mary, why don't you assemble a group. We don't need to know who it is. If interested parties, we'll leave that to you, and report back to us at next meeting. That wouldn't trigger any of this. That's not a formal action. It's not a resolution. It's not an order. It's not a bill. I understand what you're saying, the real importance and value of getting informal advice from citizens of all kinds. But as I read this, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, the very simple way to avoid all those horrible things and those burdens is to just don't do it formally. Just say, why don't you folks go off? We don't need to know who, but why don't you, who I see in the back of the room wearing the so-and-so t-shirts or hats in support of this or that issue, why don't you get together and report back to us? Then the board or the group or the government agency has not made appointments directly, has not offered a resolution or an ordinance or an order. I think there's kind of a false choice here between getting good, thoughtful advice from the citizenry or interested parties on the one hand, and all these burdens and complications on the other. I don't see it as a choice like that. I see it as if you take formal action, say we're forming this group and here are the people who are going to serve out and no others, then yes, you are subject as a governmental body to all those things. But if you don't do that and just say, hey, go out and talk about it and report back to us. We don't even know, we don't care how many are on this group or panel or club or whatever you want to call yourselves. Why don't you guys just go in a room somewhere, talk about it, and report back to us at the next meeting. Go form a prom committee. We don't need to know who's on it, but why don't you parents who have assembled here or others who aren't in this room go do that? That seems to me the difference. And so I'm not quite seeing why all these burdens and complications would have to come into play as long as it's done informally. That's how I read the amendment as amended.
Mr. Chairman,
Carlson.
Representative Simon, I agree that it can be avoided by failing to take formal action, by passing an ordinance, policy, or so on. But I'm not sure that you want that particular consequence, as has already been enumerated by Representative Marquardt. Do we want the public not to know who the membership is explicitly of this group? If we just say, Joe Blow, why don't you go off and meet with some of your counterparts who are concerned about this issue and come back with us to a recommendation, rather than us taking formal action to designate the specific members of the group who are going to bring back a recommendation, and so that they're clearly identified and the members of the public know who to talk to. It's clearly we can avoid it by doing exactly what you say, but I'm not sure that you want that outcome to occur.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, I am concerned that on our agenda today we have a long list and we have only one private citizen left to testify, and I would hope we would at least make sure we give this last testifier time.
Time, okay. And remember, this agenda has been out for about a week, mm-hmm. more or less. So we will.
Okay, and good. All right. Just wanted to be sure. I just know you're a very prompt person.
Well, we're moving as fast as we can.
Yes, I can see that.
Appreciate the time Representative Paymar is giving us today, too.
We do very much.
Could be in another meeting right now, too, a conference committee. Any further discussion here? Representative Kiffmeyer, question.
The point I just wanted to make is that when I hear this, when it's a school closing, Representative Simon, I am sure that kind of casual situation would not occur, and I trust the judgment of the school board members that they wouldn't do that. In that case, that is the place for a resolution ordinance and where there should be all of the requirements of the open meeting law, versus people are having a disagreement about or having different ideas about prom, and they get together, or the students do. And I think those are judgment calls that I think within this law, you have that. And I think that our local school boards, and the other thing is that just because you make it public doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be a crowd. As we all know, we have these town hall meetings, and it's a sense that you've made it public so people can if they want to, and it depends upon the controversy. And again, the judgment of the school board or any of these entities in regards to doing that, I think will make it easier. But I think what people object to the most is that the substantive kinds of decisions that are made in the discussion, and then when it comes time to bring the results of that discussion, all those little decisions that went into that, that is the only part that becomes public. And that, I think, is what people object to. And it is on the majors of the issue, such as those things. And I think they rightfully, the public should have that kind of input into that discussion on those things. And I, that's just my comments at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you.
Mr. Neumeister, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record. And I want to remind everyone, 10:30, we have taxes. And I have one more person after Mr. Neumeister, and one more bill, maybe.
Mr. Neumeister,
to the Paymar memo.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. There are two laws in our state that really represent the representation of for, by, and of the people. Two tools that we use. One is the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act, and secondly is the open meeting law. One of the things about 2958, the bill, and the amendment is to correct, is that the Department of Administration has described this as updating case law, clarifying, and technical over the breadth of the testimony here at the public bodies. I disagree with that, particularly with the definition of public body. It is not technical. It is major. With this new definition as proposed in the bill, which the Pawlowski-Paymar amendment, which thank you, Mr. Pawlowski, for moving it, is to address, is that the new bill, the bill that the public proposed definition in the bill, a significant number of commissions, committees, task forces, and work groups on the state and local level that are now open or ambiguously argued open because of the different kinds of case law, or the opinion by a public attorney who errs because of the ambiguous case law, yes, it should be open. Those are open. But it may no longer be open with this new proposed definition in the bill of 2958. I'll give you an example of that, and you may have read that in the Star Tribune's article about how myself and a reporter argued successfully that the St. Paul Police Chief Advisory Council Board, looking at the new police chief, should be open to the public. One of the first response from the city attorneys was, nope, it should not be open because all they do is recommend. They're not a decision making. And that's one of the case law things out there. In the bill before you, the definition of the public body focuses only on public bodies that are governing bodies or part of a governing body. With the new language in the bill, which the Pawlowski-Paymar Amendment tries to address and will does address, government commissions such as police and fire commissions would seem to no longer be subject to the open meeting law. The emphasis on governing body in the new language in the bill will, I believe, encourage governing bodies to create other groups to do the fundamental work of the government without public scrutiny. The new proposal, the bill, in my judgment, will make state and local government less accountable in Minnesota, less transparent and open, will limit the public's right to be informed, to present its views, and to detect improper influences. The language in the bill as proposed narrows the reach of the effectiveness of the open meeting law because it will change the parts of the government, committee, task forces, advisory groups, it will apply to. Again, ambiguous, how you read the statute and some of the case law, it has been argued successfully for those items to be open. In my long experience of working with citizens and reporters and doing my own advocacy, I've been able to argue and prevail in getting government entities to have their task forces, ad hoc committees, and advisory committees and other such bodies like that open to the public using the current law and the court decisions, because they're all over. The stakeholders, and it was talked about a little bit in committee here, who are in support of this bill are Minnesota School Board Association, the League of Minnesota Cities, other types of government associations, but also the Minnesota Newspaper Association. However, citizens often have issues with how the government conducts a public business. How are the interests of citizens represented in the development of this bill? Citizens are a stakeholder too. I would like to comment on at least some emails I recently became aware of, and I'll give you an example. This is from Mr. Tom Grunhofer from the Association of League of Minnesota Cities. This is an email that was sent to Ms. Kapinski. Again, various stakeholders' input based on a draft that Mr. Paymire sent to various interests. Basically, he does say, I think the law should certainly apply to committees of the governing body that include a quorum of the governing body, and to advisory committees or commissions established by statute or by ordinance or by resolution. Basically what the Paymire Amendment does. The Pulaski Paymire Amendment does. The Minnesota Newspapers Association. This was from Mark Anvinson, who's the lobbyist for the legal counsel for the Minnesota Newspapers Association. I also think, and he talks about his point of view, he also thinks that the more efficient solution will be that eventually a good set of facts will reach the appellate courts and the bad language in the sovereign case will be wiped out. Well, I don't know how many years that may take. But I do know that citizens are not able to see how recommendations being made to public bodies will not be. It's here now with you, the legislators, to make that. That should happen now, not waiting for some set of facts to happen to where a Supreme Court, a Court of Appeals case that has been used to deny people the ability to go to advisory committees, ad hoc committees, you know, that do advisory things. There should be an open discussion of what the Minnesota open meeting law can be, and not a secret discussion between some stakeholders as to what it should be. It has been my experience at the legislature for three decades plus on these kinds of issues. There are not going to be masses of citizens organized and ready to knock down the doors to preserve openness, accountability, and transparency. I have been here since 1978 when I began my venture to do the dance of the legislators and the legislative process. I saw 7, 8, 9 groups representing openness interest, public accountability interest, those kinds of things. Common Cause, League of Women Voters, media interests had their own representatives. The Star Tribune, John Finnegan, a well-known editor of the Pioneer Press, was up here. Minnesota Broadcasters Association, about 10, 15 years ago, and now 33 years later, 32, who do we have? The Minnesota Newspapers Association, who do look out for their interests, and citizens, but sometimes they part, and a grain, older, and somewhat wiser, Rich Neumeister. And there's a public record for that. So, if I can't do it, and I can't do it by myself and all those groups, where is the interest and the leadership, and who's going to look out for their interest? And that's you, the legislature. Because, you saw the lineup here. Now, you have several options before you today. One of those options is to put on the Pulaski-Paymire Amendment and go forward. Number two, I contend the public body definition as is. Take that out. Three, you can do, just pass the bill. Number four is basically lay it over, just have more discussion on it, come back next year. Now, those are some choices with you, and the leadership rests with you. But I know in my 33 years here, when we have a major piece of legislation, no one is going to take next year or 3 years or 4 years from now to to come back on advisory. I've just seen, you know, well, we've passed the big thing. I'm looking at this as a big hook. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I just leave you with a quote. Openness produces and creates better governmental programs, more efficiency in government, and government more responsive to public interest and less suspect to corruption than does secrecy. A free, literate, and otherwise informed public should ask for and be satisfied with nothing less than openness in every level of government. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm ready to take any of your questions.
Any questions? I do have one more individual that wishes to testify. So, thank you, Mr. Neumeister.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Andy Friedel and Martin Owens. One or the other wishes to come up, or both. Both could come up if they want to, and we can grab another chair. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Pawlowski. My name is Marty Owings. I'm a reporter for KFAI Radio.
My name is Andy Friedel. I'm the news director at KFAI.
Okay, you've heard a lot of testimony today, so I'll try to be brief. Thank you for allowing me to testify, Chairman Pawlowski, members of the committee. While it is true that I'm here in my capacity as a reporter, I'm also here as a private citizen who has concerns about openness in government. The Paymar amendment that you are considering today goes to the heart of that transparency, in my opinion, further strengthens the law as it serves to clarify the definition of a public body. I think if we're truly interested in serving the principles of our democracy, let's just get back to that, it must start with well-informed and well-informed electorate. As all of you know, being well-informed includes access to information, meetings, and discussions held by all public bodies who are charged with making or shaping public policy. Look, we have to try to avoid the temptation to cloud the issue here with legal definitions or cherry-picked case law that erodes access. In the final analysis, it shouldn't be only the letter of the law, but the spirit and the intent of the law which is considered. People know the difference between open and closed, even if they aren't versed in the legal terminology. And in the 24/7 news cycle and online world, it would seem misinformation can become fact before the truth ever comes to light. It is that much more important and critical that citizens and the press have access to public meetings regardless of the legal definition of those meetings. It should be the idea that the people's business is not just some people's business, but every person's business. Not just the interests of a few, but the interests of many. Deliberations and considerations of a public nature, regardless of the venue, should be always transparent to that public. Open meeting laws do more than just provide citizens with the opportunity to be better informed. They build public trust. You all know that. Now look, it was suggested that calls to a government agency voicing concern about open meeting laws cancel each other out and that that should somehow have bearing on this issue. That isn't the real question here. The real question is whether or not there will be more or less transparency in government. It's simple. The real chilling effect, as Mr. Sullum and others characterize it, is telling folks that transparency in government is somehow less important than a perceived threat of litigation. That can't be. That's not the government, the country I grew up in, the state I live in. That's not right. Come on now. We're all reasonable people. We know what this is. We can see it. Representative Winkler alluded to this earlier. And Representative Paymar said that the public would be shocked if they knew some of the things that go on. Let them be shocked. Let them understand what's at stake for them. Because that's what our democracy is about. You all know this. And so do the folks who testified here earlier. Now, whenever you set out to examine the laws and structures that provide the public with access as elected representatives of our communities, it's my hope and the many hopes of many, many more people that will go unheard here today. They're not here. You won't hear from them. but that you will seek ways to add transparency, not to remove it. They need to be better informed, not less informed. So whether you call it an advisory group, a special committee, a task force, whatever label you hang on it, we all know what it is. And so do they. They're not ignorant, the public. But when we seek to remove that transparency, they become less informed. I support Representative Paymar's amendment and hope that you will do the same. Now, I thank you, and here's a switch. You can ask me some questions.
Members, we're under a little bit of a time crunch here. The tax committee is coming in. Representative Marquardt, we're going to have a hearing on your bill next week. That bill is too large to do in the minor amount of time that we have left, so we'll have a full hearing on it. Questions? Seeing no questions, Representative Lanning?
It's not a question to them, but I want to make some comments.
All right, Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. Representative Paymar, I've been a long-time advocate of open meeting law, and we need more transparency in government, very clearly in a lot of ways. The problem I have with your amendment is that we're putting more to squeeze on local governments without doing what we ought to be doing right now, and that's putting a squeeze on ourselves. You know, if local governments conducted business the way we conduct business as a legislature, they'd be in jail. I mean, look at all of the decisions that get made here in this place in closed caucus. Caucus of a committee, caucus of either party. All the decisions that get made that are not aired in public. If we really want to be advocates of open meeting and transparency, we ought to look at ourselves first, rather than putting more of a squeeze on local units of government. That was my problem years ago. I welcomed the open meeting law, but I said, where is the open meeting law as it relates to the legislature? Non-existent. And it seems to me that we ought to be focusing on ourselves here at this point in time rather than focusing on putting more pressure on local governments. I think the discussion here today illustrates that the nuances of this language create more questions or potential problems than it solves. If a local unit of government is appointing an advisory committee to advise them on an important decision, that is something that should be open. The group should be required to be open. But to have kind of a blanket that covers any and all advisory groups, it seems to me, is an overkill here. And we ought to be more focused, it seems to me, on trying to not have a double standard. I think we've got a double standard in Minnesota, and it's time to put an end to the double standard. And you know, another point here, if we want to put the squeeze, maybe we ought to put the squeeze on lobbying organizations. Look at how many tax dollars get put into lobbying organizations who meet in private, developing policy positions, trying to influence public policy at the state level, and where's the openness there? It seems to me that before we go down this road of your amendment, Representative Paymar, we've got some other things that need our attention.
Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, just in closing, and I really do appreciate you taking the time, and sorry, Representative Marquardt, but we didn't get you your bill because of what I did, but I do think this has been a...
Representative Paymar, it's not your fault. I'll take full blame, so...
I do think that the Pawlowski-Paymar amendment has been important for us to discuss, and Representative Lanning, I could not agree with you more. I said that at the outset of my comments, that some of what prompted me to do this was not just my 8 years as a city council member, but also 14 years sitting in this body and watching what we do. I am fully culpable and responsible and a participant in what we do here at the legislature. Some would argue that's the only way we get things done. I would argue we should be shining a brighter light on what we're doing. I would just say that this was my attempt, with the help of others, staff,
to try to address this issue, and I would like to address it on a legislative level also. I would just want, real quickly, Mr. Chair, to say Mr. Carlson's comments about special meetings. All that's required of a special meeting is to post a written notice of the date, time, place, and purpose of a meeting. So I think he was a little disingenuous when he was talking about how onerous that might be for a task force to announce that the meeting is public. Again, as Representative Winkler and I think Simon and others have said, the language in the amendment is very clear that on lines 2.14, that if the task force is designed for the purpose of providing the body advice or recommendation on the exercise of governmental powers on a matter that is or may be pending before the body or subset of the body, and that it's formed under resolution or ordinance or order. This is very different than a group of kids getting together and discussing something that they might bring back to the school board or something like that. So I think it's very clear. When I was a city council member, Representative Lanning, back in the 80s, we always said, because nobody wanted nobody wanted to violate the open meeting law, you err on the side of caution. That's the way it should be. And I finally, Mr. Chair, you know, if you look at the civil fines and the penalties for violation of the order, I grant you there could be some suits. But it does say specifically in statute that the court may award costs and attorney fees to a defendant if the court finds that the action of the chapter was frivolous and without merit. So if someone just brought motion about a violation of the open meeting law. Furthermore, a local elected official can violate this three times before they're even required to leave office. So I think that maybe the amendment needs some work. I think that I have I hope that we recognize that that the government works better when the public is fully informed, and the public is not fully informed here at the legislature, and I would argue in many local government arenas, and I would like to see that changed. And so I offer the amendment. You can do with it as you please. I would hope that you would support it.
All right. Members, just a reminder that when we spent the better part of a year recommending significant changes to the rules of the House, one of the rules that we considered, and some states actually have them, that when significant amendments are offered to a bill on the floor, the bill is automatically sent back to committee so that there can be public input on the bill and testimony taken on the bill. So this was the chair's way of illustrating the point on his own bill, not on another member's, but on a bill that we're carrying with the administration. Representative Winkley, did you want to offer that amendment at this time, or are you not going to offer it at all?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it's exactly the amendment I offered before, so I move on line 2.17 to insert the word students. I'm sorry, after the word employees, I would insert a comma and then add the word students.
All right. Does everyone understand that amendment? Ms. Dyson, you want to just explain it one more time?
Mr. Chairman, on the amendment, page 2, line 17, after employees, insert comma students, and so that it would read that this does not include an advisory group comprised solely of the body's employees, students, or contractors, and the body would be any kind of school body, obviously, for students and employees, so I think it works.
And I think Representative Paymard indicated he was supportive of it, too. So all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We now have the amendment as amended before us. We're running out of time, so this is on the A11 Paymar-Pulowski amendment, or as I like to refer to it, the Pulowski-Paymar amendment, but we can quibble over that. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Division has been called. All those in favor, raise your hands. Opposed.
7-5, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Now the bill. Members, this bill is going to rules, so the motion before us now is to send the bill as amended to rules. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Maybe it's too late, but does this amendment we just passed, would it need a fiscal note or local note because of increased staff time for recording minutes, publishing notices of meeting dates, things like that?
Representative Anderson, there's been no fiscal note or even attempt at a fiscal note on this bill, with or without the amendment. We can look into that as it goes to rules. If it would, then rules would send it to finance. I want to make one clarification. The Marquardt bill, although it would go to rules, would ultimately have to go back to finance because there would be a fiscal note with it. So if a fiscal note does appear, the rules committee would then have to send it back to finance and we'd have to address the fiscal concern.
Yeah.
So, Representative Poppy, do you have one motion for us? No, we don't have. She doesn't. So with that, meeting is adjourned.